SiriusXM Sports presents
At the Races with Steve Bick.
Horse racing, handicapping,
interviews.
This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
We're back. Hour three at the races. And just down to the knocking on the door, a nice delivery of the book that I mentioned before we went to Derby. And that was Linda Carroll and David Rosner's Out of the Clouds. I got one of those. First, I got a paperback, you know, sort of that, the review copy that comes in. It's not completely finished and fully edited, but he got the final version, and it looks great. Looks absolutely great. The Stymie story and that of Hirsch Jacobs, which by itself is a fabulous story. Of course, it's no longer a steak named after him, but don't get me started. Marty McGee, good morning.
Bick, you are talking about something historical, and I was sitting here writing something today for part of the Preakness doings, which seems kind of odd. With, you know, it's usually current events, but one of my editors, who you know well, Erwin Cohen, has asked that I kind of do a, upon further review, little thing on whether or not Ben Jones really did train citation, and whether or not Bob Baffert, therefore, would have at least tied Ben Jones for real Kentucky Derby victories with five. And I just kind of throw it out there and leave it there. So I don't know how well-versed you are, but whenever us DRF guys would have dinner with Joe Hirsch, he would often bring up that Jimmy Jones, Ben's son, would kind of complained to him that his dad pretty much took citation away from him right before the Derby and then ran him through the Triple Crown, and then Jimmy ended up training him again after that. So there's kind of an asterisk on who is the all-time leading Kentucky Derby winning trainer, Ben Jones, or has legitimately Bob Baffert tied him now. What do you think?
Well, there's a few people that could address this. Jay Hubdy. Jay's got a real appreciation on the historic front, and I suppose with Joe involved, Jay Haskin might have some input.
Yeah,
his tie to Joe, but
yeah, the record book shows Ben Jones was six. Period, and that's, we're not going to argue that, but just for the sake of argument and talking about it, it's really interesting stuff. You know, really, Jimmy trained citation. For all I know, he might have trained Ponder, who won in 49, and then Hillgale in 52. I don't know what, you know, to what degree. You know, it's kind of like Norman and Mark, you know, who's really, but Mark's down as a trainer and all that. Now Norm is gone, but there's probably a better example, because it was harder back then for them to get around, obviously, than these guys. They fly here and drive there, and you know, there's the texting and the everything else that we can do now. But yeah, it's just I just thought it was pretty. Erwin, one of my bosses, said go on and do this, so I did.
Well, we're gonna also be invoking Preakness history too, because Baffert, with the obvious opportunity a week from Saturday to tie another, this is an 1800s version when it comes to the Preakness. So the history, virtually everything, Mart, that keeps coming up, whether it was the 3 inches of rain eclipsing eclipsing 1918. There was history everywhere we looked.
Yeah, and you know, technically, Walden is the guy's name, not no relation to Elliot, I assume. But a
just
guy named Walden.
Yeah.
He won seven Preaknesses back in the 1800s, and now Baffert and Lucas still has six, remember? And he's going to run two against Baffert in this Preakness. So he could also, you know, conceivably tie Walden with the all-time Preakness wins.
Now, I see where Walden had a nickname or a name he went by, Trainer Walden. So we may get introduced a little bit more to him from the historic perspective. Speaking of history, I've been giving everybody these interesting little tidbits. There were a couple of May 9th Derby winners over the years, including, with John White coming, Spokane was one of the winners on this date, going way, way back, and a Montana bred Mart. I don't see a lot of Montana breds. And
well, there's some serendipity there, because doesn't John White often refer to himself as, when he worked for the Daily Racing Form, as a chart caller at Playfair in Spokane way back
Absolutely.
When?
Absolutely. He's going to love this. And you can also fold in another legend, Old Rosebud. One on May 9th, 1914. So those are your May 9th Derby winners.
Well, they
Hoop
say,
Jr. No, not
if
Hoop
you really,
Jr.
If you read up on regret, that was kind of the cutoff point when Matt Wynn really started beating the drum for the Derby. It was 1950
yes.
on. So Old Rosebud kind of was still back in the dark ages.
Very much. And they acknowledge that regrets win. And, you know, that was the most obscure, Mart, as it happens, that was the most obscure portion of the history that Justify eclipsed, because it was asked when I got to Kentucky, you know, 2 weeks or out, who was it that floated a question whether any other horse had only raced at one racetrack before potentially winning the Derby?
I think, yeah, Darren was on that project, wasn't he?
Well, he researched it for me, and he came up with some horses that failed. But a listener, and I got to pull up his email, the horse that did it was Regret. She had only run at Saratoga, and the Derby was her seasonal debut at three.
Yeah.
Amazing.
Let's see Baffert do that.
Well, let's use that. That's a great line. Who was it? Somebody said, "Let's see him win the Derby with a first-time starter." That was
right. Then they'll
that
be
was pretty
trust.
Good. You were on hand. Everybody left town and left you with the spotlight. And Elliot, to some degree, just addressed the issue. And obviously, this whole thing with whatever was ailing Justify when he was favoring his left hind on Sunday, clearly it took Baffert by surprise. I mean, that, and it feels like this is going to be one of those things that he's going to have to atone for and live down.
Yeah, I don't know why he went with that scratches thing. Because the horse, if you really pick apart that video, the horse was lame. He was towing and everything else. The good news, you know, moving 3 days forward to this morning, when I looked Jimmy Barnes in the eye and he looked me in the eye and I said, "Well, are you going to try and train him tomorrow?" He said, "We're not going to try and train him tomorrow. We are going to train him tomorrow." And this is Wednesday morning, a couple hours ago. This is after Mary Scalay and her team came in and got him out and did all kinds of stuff with it and pronounced him healthy. And if you talk to a number of horsemen like I did this morning, Danny Pites, my brother, some other people, this is not uncommon for horses to emerge from races like this with with a minor ding or this or that. And the proof, of course, will be in the pudding, Steve, over the next few days here at Churchill. Will he go out and gallop? Jimmy's saying yes. Will he do it Friday, Saturday, Sunday? He's not leaving until around noon. The flight, I talked to one of the Tech Sutton guys. The flight out of Louisville to Baltimore takes off the ground around noon Eastern on Wednesday. So that means we'll get to see over the next 5-6 days here what Jimmy and Bob choose to do with him. And Jimmy's parting words to me were, I'm very confident that we're fine. So, you know, again, these horses, you just don't see about it because they don't win the Derby. You don't hear about it, that they come out of these races in the immediate aftermath like this horse did. What was it? 14 hours after he'd run. And, you know, it's a hard race, and it was a bad track. And so I think it's completely plausible. That's the word I'm looking for, that this horse is okay. I don't know what Elliot told you.
No, he went there on Monday, and he's got every confidence that he's fine. And he'll, you know, I am going to be interested to see. He referenced, what did he say, which quarter? I'm going to have to go back and listen, actually. He referenced not the hind, not just the hoof, but he delineated where the bruise is, what quadrant.
Yeah.
Back there. So,
yeah, you know, I'm glad he did that, and transparency is great. It's the best thing for this game. And, you know, again, I don't know why the scratches thing came up, but I, you know, you used the word atoned. Bob will be on the NTRA conference call tomorrow afternoon at 1 o'clock. So I think a lot, 1 o'clock Eastern, a lot of us will be interested in hearing what he has to say.
Well, most of us, the rest of us, Mart, will be interested in what's happening from 1 o'clock till about 4:30 or so. Or actually, it's later because it's a twilight card. So I guess we can take in both the conference and the pick six. We'll talk about that in a minute. But I want you to recount your weekend and get your thoughts about the winners and about the wagering. I've already said I'm sorry that I didn't consult you earlier on the undercard, because I saw afterward that you liked Galton on Friday and Yoshida on Saturday, and both of them stopped me like mud stops a snowmobile.
Well, unfortunately, I did terrible too, because I didn't have anything with them, around them, nothing. You know, it just, I've said it for years, pick threes and pick fours are a great way to waste winners. And I really did like Galton, and I really did like Yoshida. And I messed them up. So, you know, they both, Yoshida, I think it was it a Pimlico last year when we all went, oh, this might be a really good horse. I think that's where it was. And it even though he hadn't run since last fall, gave him a good shot in that race, because I just thought maybe Beach Patrol would need the race. And then Galton, if you went back when Tom Amos had him here, he had some really good grass races over this course, and I think he had a pretty good overall record over the Churchill course, despite his recent form having not been so good. And, it, you know, it was Maker wins with $28 horses all the time. So, you know, turn the page. We got, that's why God invented the next race. We can go on and look forward to that.
What were your final Derby and Oaks thoughts in particular?
Oaks, I think we're going to have a good rivalry with Monomoy Girl and the filly who ran third. Now that she's with Asmussen, and it seems like they'll be eyeing the same races up in New York and that. I was real happy for Brad. I've got to be pretty good friends with him. We got a real good friend in common. You know, I needed her to win a grass race here last September to hit the single six, and she won. So she's never going to owe me anything. I thought she was terrific. And then the Derby, I mean, were you here on Sunday because it was so beautiful?
No.
I don't know if it had to be like that. It was just so miserable. Both my daughters were here, and, you know, a lot of my Derby experiences anymore are depend on their happiness, you know, getting them all settled and just enjoying their presence, because my one daughter lives in Seattle. So, you know, it's everybody's got their own little deals going on Derby Day. And from that respect, it was very enjoyable, but the rain was a damper. And Justify, I mean, he was awesome. You know, I'm kind of puzzled, and I haven't really listened to anybody, but, you know, after you go 45 and then you finish in 204, isn't that a final six furlongs of 118 and change? I mean, what are people saying about that? And nobody really caught up to it. So I'm just wondering, have you heard anything about that?
Well, the racetrack puts a big asterisk on everything. And,
right,
you know, there's already people that are, you know, that are bringing out the obvious next issue, which is the wet track Derby winners of recent vintage. And,
right,
you know, Orb and Always Dreaming and, you know, Mind That Bird. People are funny. They're talking about these winners of the Derby on wet tracks, and they obviously include Mind That Bird. Everybody should acknowledge that if Rachel Alexandra sticks to her own kind, Mind That Bird would have won the Preakness. So let's acknowledge that. Super Saver, another one. And those are the horses that have been coming out of wet track Derby wins and then flopping in Baltimore. Two of them, of course, are Pletcher horses, and we know Pletcher only ran in those Preaknesses because he had to, because he had the
right
Derby winner.
Yeah, and then Shug was the other one. Or Shug hardly ever runs back in 2 weeks. You know, of course, hardly anybody does anymore. But you know. I'll tell you the key to the Preakness, though. Are we done talking about the Derby?
Yeah.
What is Chad going to do? Because this is probably the only chance he has to beat this horse, you know, in the near future. He's certainly not going to wait for the Belmont with Good Magic. I think.
No, he's not. He's not running in Belmont with him no matter what.
Yeah. So, I mean, he just, all things considered, you know, this Good Magic, as opposed to Justify, was not on the hurried track to make the Derby. The Derby was only the third start of the year for Good Magic. So it might be, the timing might favor Chad to go on and take one more shot at him. And I'll tell you, from a wagering perspective, if Good Magic isn't in the Preakness, Justify has to be 1-5. And otherwise, he's about 3-5, and it's a decent betting race.
I can pretty much concur on that. I know that, you know, there's a couple of nice horses that are jumping in here, but Sporting Chance, Tenfold, Asmussen, Dallas, Give Me a Minute, but Valine Farms. But come on, if this horse runs back, and you know, for everybody that's trotting out those stats on wet track winners, they should also have it. They should offset it with Baffert's record with Derby winners in the Preakness, where he's 4-4.
Right, absolutely. And just how, you know, not to take away from those, every Derby winner looks good winning the Derby, but, you know, if you size up what we think about Justify right now, which is a lot, you know, versus, say, Orb, who was kind of at a tactical disadvantage because being the comfort behind her, and Mind That Bird, who we all thought was fluky, and then the Pletcher angle for his two. You know, we're talking about the Slop Derby winners. You know, you have to really – you got to like Baffert in here, period. It's just – yeah.
Well, we will look toward Baltimore. And, Marty, in the meantime, let's talk and explain to everybody. They may have forgotten, because last year we didn't have to worry about a pick six carryover. This year we do. And we go back to the origins of this split the baby concept. And the money, $770,000, Half of it goes into a jackpot feed, and half will be the base of tomorrow's force out pick six.
Yeah, and I wrote a fairly lengthy, I didn't mean to, but it ended up being lengthy, piece about how this whole single six came about, and there's a lot of components to it. So I would, if you're really interested, I would urge you to go to drf.com and read through it. But essentially, you nailed the basics. It's a tomorrow evening. It's a 5 o'clock first post at Churchill. They will use half of the 770 left over from Derby Day, so that's 385,000, and that's a force out. And it goes from a $2 bet to a 20-cent bet. And I did a little research on it, Steve. And when they did this 2 years ago, the first year that these rules were in effect in 2016, they were chasing a carryover of similar size, and they bet an additional $1.47 million into it. I don't know if the people are weary of the jackpot bet that Gulfstream, you know, has ad infinitum and is offered at, you know, a number of other venues. I don't know if they'll do $1.4 million in addition to this. But anyway, the pick six or the single six is on the last six races every day. That means races 3 to 8 tomorrow evening. And I found it to be a very difficult sequence. And then whatever happens then, the other half of the baby, as you describe it, will be used to seed the single six going forward from Friday on. And that will be played under the rules that we've become accustomed to at Gulfstream and elsewhere. And that is to sweep the jackpot after that. You need to have the only winning ticket. Tomorrow night is not. It goes tomorrow night, the first half, which I think it's really pretty good concept, despite all the, you know, the objections we've had to it from Ken Ramsey and some others. I think overall, I do like it, and I would be inclined to play it tomorrow, as opposed to, you know, if it's a $2 increment, especially the way the sequence looks. I couldn't really hang my hat on any single.
Well, that's not, I don't like to hear that.
Okay. I mean, if you had it, I'm looking at race 7. There's a filly named Allstruck who looked really good for Rusty in winning the previous condition. She's in the 7th race. I guess that's about as close as I could get to a single, but she really didn't beat much that day at all. And so it's somewhat of an illusion there. And, you know, the one bad thing about these jackpot, these single sixes, as opposed to like how they have it other places, is if you get beat a nose in one of the races, you're 5 for 6 and get beat a nose, you get nothing. There are no consolations in this. So, you know, even in the pick five at Keeneland and Gulfstream, if you hit 4 out of 5, there's a consolation at least. And there's nothing in these jackpot bets for that.
Well, you mentioned Awestruck for Rusty. We had Rusty on the other day to talk about Funny Duck, which was unbelievable. I guess, what, Turf to Dirt, Route to Sprint, maybe?
41? How was he only 41 or 14 horse field?
I don't know.
I thought you go back and look at his form, he looks like he should be 80-1. I mean, he was the one other than going Turf to Dirt with one bad dirt race way back on his paper and a really, really good field, what we thought going in.
Well, you know, the best part, and of course, you know, the wet track is, it makes everything, you know, kind of up in the air. But the best part of it was that Rusty said that it was Brad Kelly that said to him, Let's go back and try the dirt.
Yeah.
So how about that?
Yeah, I quoted him saying, Mr. Kelly said, why don't we try the dirt? And he said, you want to try the dirt? We're going to run on the dirt.
Well,
you know, to win, the only thing I saw right away when he crossed the finish line, I saw the jacket, and I thought, oh my God! You know, last year I loved Wild Shot, and we did great with him winning and here, I think in handicapping the race, I said the only thing I came up with to anybody was, well, and of course Rusty won this last year with Calumet with Wild Shot. That was the only reference to Funny Duck. You know, speaking of turf to dirt and cutting back, Boyd Crowder in the first leg, Mart, the $25,000 claimer going 7/8. Brendan Walsh is got Boyd Crowder doing what we call the not just the triple whammy, but the quadruple whammy, dropping down, turf to dirt, cutting back, blinkers on. Four karma moves on Boyd Crowder in the first leg of this.
Yeah, Lannery trying to come up the rail too. Quintuple whammy.
All right, I think that horse 9-2, I think is a bit of a lean in that first leg. Are your picks must be up right in the paper?
Yeah, the picks are up. But you know what? This race I thought was very much a spread race. I would hate to have to depend on that horse alone to stay alive.
I hear you. Anybody else that you think could help players?
I mean, this a horse I picked on top in the fourth is you know, by the way, Doug O'Neill has a string here. He and Baffert both had a little string that they're going to keep around to the end of the Churchill meet. But he's got this number three horse, What's on the Agenda, who is a 5-2 morning line favorite. He ran big over Keeneland, just got beat on the wire. And you know, this jock, Fernando de la Cruz, riding primarily at Indiana Grand, but coming down here for select mounts, and very underrated jockey. You know, he's a jock for your horse, Buchero. But I thought, you know, if I really had to single something, I'd either go with Rusty in the seventh or this What's on the Agenda in the fourth. But again, otherwise, I thought it's tough to single out a lot of these races.
Well, we'll be working on this tonight, and we'll have I will have a play. Don't forget, it's 20 cents too, so at least that helps you. And it is a must pay, and the takeout is completely negated here, obviously, with that kind of money, $335,000 involved.
Yeah, Mark. Yeah, 385, and you know, again, they bet $1.4 million on. I don't know if they'll do that tomorrow, but yeah,
you would think. I appreciate it, and on to Baltimore, as we say.
Yeah, I'm leaving money Monday.
We will see you there, and of course for Martin, it's always a homecoming. They you should see the banners. You go to Fells Point and welcome back, Marty. Right across Eastern Parkway.
Northern Parkway.
That's up there. I'm talking downtown. I'm talking the other side of town. Down down at the point.
All right. See you, Bick.
Marty McGee, everybody. The one and only. Last break. Let's step away. We've got, obviously, we can't get both John White and Seth Merrow in here. So we're going to draw straws. I guess we invoked Spokane, so I think we have to get John and we'll get Seth. Let's do that because tomorrow we got Quigley too. So John White, and we'll slide Seth to a rare Thursday appearance for Seth Merrow. It'll give him time to join Twitter. Back after this with John White.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
With 35 years at the forefront of sports technology, Stats provides next-generation sports content for basketball, baseball, football, soccer. And now, Stats is turning its sights to horse racing. RaceLens is the most in-depth product on the market. With innovative analytics powered by data from Equibase, it will change the way you follow horse racing. Stats Race Lens, bringing clarity to handicapping. Learn more at stats.com/racelens.
Get started in Kentucky. Over $8 million in additional purse money is available at the five Kentucky tracks for horses eligible for the Kentucky Thoroughbred Development Fund. Kentucky is a good place to race your Kentucky bred. Come home to Kentucky and make a start.
Hi, John Parada here, inviting you to join me in the Dublin Racing Club, along with friends like Steve Bick and Tom Durkin. If you have an interest in Ireland and horse racing, it's the best way to be involved with both. So log on now to DublinRacingClub.com and come join us at one of Ireland's 26 racetracks.
The Dublin Racing Club is designed to introduce racing fans to the ownership experience by participating in the sport in Ireland. For more information on the Dublin Racing Club, log on to DublinRacingClub.com.
Hey folks, Eddie Olchek here. In my career, I've experienced all of North America's biggest sporting events, and none of them are quite as fun as the Preakness Stakes. It's a weekend-long party in Baltimore, complete with the best three-year-olds racing for the middle jewel of the Triple Crown. And this year, my friends at ExpressBet are giving one lucky customer the chance to join me and Marilyn for the big race. What do you have to do to win? Sign up for their $25,000 Preakness Big Bet Sweepstakes and start betting the races with ExpressBet. The grand prize winner gets tickets to the race, hotel accommodations, airfare, and more. Plus, ExpressBet is giving you $25,000 to bet on the Preakness. That's right, 25 grand. With ExpressBet picking up the tab, you get to play the Preakness Stakes like a high roller. Check out ExpressBet.com to learn more and register today. And I hope to see you in the winner's circle.
Must be 18 years or older and 21 years old in certain states to open an account with ExpressBet and reside in a state where such activity is legal. Void where prohibited. National Gambling Support Line, 800-522-4700.
Now, back to At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
We're back at the races, 15 minutes to close out what has been another full day, recapping the Derby Oaks weekend, and John White's turn to do it as well. John, good morning.
Good morning, Steve. You were talking about Spokane, the horse, and he's really one of the more colorful Kentucky Derby winners in history. He was born in 1889. As you said, he was a Montana bred. And 1889 was the year that Montana became a state. It's also the year that Washington became a state, which that's where Spokane, the city, is that I grew up in. And in fact, in 1889, that was the year of what they called the Great Spokane Fire. It wiped out virtually all of downtown. Pretty much all cities back in the 1800s had a great fire somewhere along the line, and that was the year of the Great Spokane Fire. And how the horse got his name is Noah Armstrong, who lived in Montana. He was in Spokane, the city, doing business the day that that Spokane, the horse, was foaled in Montana. And it was said that that Spokane, the horse, was actually roamed with wild Mustangs when he was young. So that was part of the colorful aspect to him for the Kentucky Derby. And when he ran in the Kentucky Derby, he faced the mighty Proctor Knot, who had won the first Futurity at Belmont and was regarded as a superstar at the time. And they even had Derby rules back in 1889. The Derby was a mile and a half. Remember, this is 7 years after Apollo, the famous Apollo, won the Kentucky Derby. And Proctor Knot actually ran off twice before the start of that race. He ran off for a furlong twice, so that certainly didn't help his chances. But one of the quirky aspects to the race and was the fact that Spokane hugged the rail the entire mile and a half, and Proctor Knot came down on the outside fence. And they were completely on one side of the track and the other at the finish. Of course, there was no photo finish in 1889. You had three placing judges, and they deliberated for an unusually long time most people, you know, you would think they would have called it a dead heat if they were having to take that long. But they declared that Spokane had won the race by a nose. And it was a controversial decision because half the people at the track thought Proctor not had won the race. But the New York Times actually called that the greatest Derby ever run up to that time. So, like I say, that's certainly one of the more colorful horses to ever win the Kentucky Derby. The barn in which Spokane was born in Montana has been placed on the National Register of Historic Places. So, some interesting aspects to Spokane. You were talking about regret. You know, one thing about regret, not only had she won the Kentucky Derby, having only raced at one track previously, but as you pointed out, it was her first start of the year going a mile and a quarter, but it was also her first race going farther than six furlongs. Can you imagine that? Here's a filly making her three-year-old debut in the Kentucky Derby, her first race going farther than six furlongs. It was her first race in Saratoga when she had raced on August 22nd, and it was a field of 16, and she just absolutely toyed with those male rivals that day. And of course, it wouldn't be until 1980 that we would get a second filly to win the Kentucky Derby, and that, of course, was Genuine Risk, and there's only been three to ever do it, winning colors, for Mr. D. Wayne Lucas being the other.
John, a few things in addition to those historic perspectives. We put away Apollo forever. We never have to listen to that again, thankfully. And your thoughts on what we saw in terms of the way the Derby turned out.
Well, I personally, you know, and I'm glad you saved the Apollo, because so much attention was focused on that I think something that Justify achieved really is not getting the plaudits that it deserves, and that is the fact that, and Steve Haskin is like the only other one that's really talked about this, that he's only the third horse in the 144-year history of the Kentucky Derby to win the race having made three or fewer career starts going into the Derby. The first was, guess who? Regret. I mean, again, showing how great she was.
Right.
I mean, the more you learn about Regret, you realize she was, to some extent, kind of the man of war of the fillies of her time. And Big Brown, when he won in 2008. So, you know, that lack of experience really, to me, is every bit of an achievement for him to win this Derby than just the fact that he had not raced as a two-year-old. But to do what he has done in the span of 76 days from his maiden win, by the way, I've got to thank you and Rick Hammerly, your show. I was sitting here the day before Justify's career debut, and 2 days before, on Friday morning, getting ready to send in the morning line for the Sunday card, and I had him listed at 9 to 5. And already I was kind of hearing some rumblings that this was maybe some monster, and then Rick Hammerly came on your show, and it didn't take more than a couple of minutes, and I thought, oh my goodness, what are we dealing with here? And I lowered him to 6 to 5. I didn't want to go any lower than that because he's a first-time starter. I mean, you can look really stupid if you make a horse 4 to 5 like that, and then they end up going off at 5-2 or 3-1, and they get beat. So I lowered him to 6-5. But more importantly for me is I called a friend in Vegas, because Rick Hammerly said, if you're in any of these Derby leagues or contests or fantasy leagues or whatever, you better think about picking this horse up. And I thought, you know what? I wonder what kind of price you could get on him in the future book. Now, I didn't get that nice juicy 300-1. But I did get $100 on him at 100-1 the day before he made his debut. So I have my ticket from February 17th on Justify at 100-1 for the Kentucky Derby.
Very nice. John, the effort itself, of course, for him to press the pace and to run this kind of half mile and win, really only good magic, the only threat to him. This one... going to see how much it took out of him, too, because you just don't see that. I mean, it's rare enough on an everyday basis or in an ordinary stake, but, you know, to do it the first time going a mile and a quarter, this was kind of the the effort that those that wanted to believe he was the Wonder Horse, as Hammer and I and Jimmy Ventura have laughed about, you got a Wonder Horse performance.
Certainly did. I mean, and actually, what a just, you know, we kind of take it for granted to a little bit with Bob Baffert, but I mean, to me, this is a fantastic training achievement, what he's done with this colt, and also the ride by Mike Smith. I mean, he is big money Mike Smith, and I mean, you know, when you're riding a big favorite like this, the important thing is not to choke and goof it up, and that's what separates the Arqueros and the Shoemakers and the Mike Smiths, Chris McCarron's, Gary Stevens's, Lafitte Pinkeye's, you know, the all-time greats, the Corderos and so forth. I mean, I still think a Cordero in that 1974 Derby winning on Cannonade when Little Current's getting stopped about 80 times. So, and that start was so critical, and it was just a beautiful start for him. When they hit the first turn, I commented, I said, well, if he's the horse Baffert says he is, he should win from there. And I know they were rolling, but he was just, Mike was just sitting there. And, you know, what this colt has done to go from 7 furlongs to a mile, to a mile and an eighth, to a mile and a quarter, increasingly tougher races, and he, you know, he in that Santa Anita Derby, he just turned back those two challenges, serious challenges from a very good colt in Bolt de Oro. And good magic in this race, I'm telling you, he ran, you know, he had trained well. You heard Jay Pribman rave about how he had looked and trained up to the race, and many others, Mike Welsh, people that I respect. And this good magic ran, you know, Chad Brown, this was a very good training job on his part. He had this champion ready for a peak performance for the Kentucky Derby, and that good magic ran his heart out all the way down the lane and tried so hard it almost kind of cost him the place there when Audible was coming on late. And I thought Audible ran a very good race too, quite frankly.
Got a great ride.
You know, I those three are very, very, they're quality colts, and there were several that had trouble in the race. You know, I thought My Boy Jack was a live long shot. I was stunned when he was 5-1 the day before, and I was even more stunned when he stayed at 5-1 and then ended up going off at 6-1 the day of the race. He was the actual, literal second favorite in the race, which just absolutely floors me. I mean, I would have never, I thought 15-1 would be the absolute lowest price he could be, but really this is a, you know, you talked, Marty McGee touched on the price of the Preakness. I have to tell you, my opinion, whether good magic runs or not, I just don't see this horse even being 1-5. I think there's too much hype now. He's undefeated. You know, Baffert with that triple crown win in recent times here, just in 2015, 3 years ago, I think you're looking at 1-10 or 1-20 on this colt. I just do. I don't see how the field's going to be too small, and the money's not, you know, it's coming in on him. Already he's been heavily, and you know, here's an interesting little tidbit. He paid $7.80 in this race, which is probably, you'll never get that again, but American Pharoah paid $7.80. Justify paid the exact $2 win payout that American Pharoah did, right to the dime.
Yeah, I forgot to actually that's a fair point, that number. And I you know, not going to get into it now, we're out of time, but it didn't make any sense to not, you know, the people that were so boisterous about throwing him out. I mean, that it just was just silly, and especially when you see, you know, what came, you know, the way the numbers came back. John,
I was going to say that, you know, they had those Derby rules even in 1889 when Spokane won. The rule was that no horse bred west of Nashville, Tennessee could win the Derby. That was the feeling at the 1889 Derby. And here was this horse bred in Montana who shattered that rule. So they were even breaking Derby rules back in 1889. And you talked about this Stormcat business. I just go back to 73 when I heard a million times no son of bold ruler could win the Kentucky Derby
right.
in a mile
That's
and a
right.
quarter. Well, they still haven't broken that son of bold ruler's track record that he set that day on the first Saturday in May in 1973.
John, I we're not going to get a chance either to talk about the non-DQ from Sunday at Santa Anita, which has just enraged people as well. And we'll save that because it does have to get addressed. And it actually helped prompt part of a night school topic last night as it happens. But meanwhile, you and I both have got to get to work and finish our, maybe you finished it already, your Preakness Stakes.
Yeah, I sent it in last night because I get busy with the plan. I need to work in the morning, so I got to bite the bullet and get it done at night.
Well, I've got to do it right now. I've got to figure out the Preakness after you and I both scored with our plays in the wagering guide. John White, everybody, and we'll talk to John ahead of Preakness next week. Going to pull up and send you out to the race day, and the race day today, Wednesday, it's still a little quiet, still waiting a little bit. Delta and Evangeline, Indiana, Louisiana, Mountaineer, Thistledown. There you go. And Happy Valley later tonight. We'll talk to Pat to get his Derby take tomorrow, as well as Steve Haskin and Tony Black. We owe Seth Merrow. I got a bunch of people I haven't even had a chance to talk to yet. So we're falling behind with Friday. Looking forward, though, to the draw today, particularly the Man of War card at Belmont. Should be fun. Good luck on your plane today. Replay tomorrow, 6 to 9 a.m. If you missed anything, come to the website, stevebick.com, archive, podcast, etc. And we'll talk to you in the morning at the races, Sirius XM. Good luck.
The latest racing news.
It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio. The latest thoroughbred racing news.
The latest racing news.
It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
The thoroughbred breeding industry will never be the same with the launch of Daily Racing Form's Buyer-Sire Performance Standings, presented by Darley. These groundbreaking ratings use buyer speed figures to measure a stallion's performance beyond wins and earnings, focusing on providing a measurement of a sire's true ability to produce high-quality horses. View the Buyer-Sire Performance Standings at drf.com/buyer-sire and get the true information that breeds results. That's drf.com/buyer-sire.